Philip II of Macedonia, Athens, 346 to 341 BCE, Part 3. At some point, Byzantium and the other coastal cities openly declared themselves against Macedonia, encouraged in this by pledges of aid from Athens and also from Persia. Philip attacked with some 30,000 men in 340 BCE and targeted Perinthus, which was closer and smaller than Byzantium. The professional engineers in his army had come up with a new artillery design and far more powerful tension catapult. These were used along with static and mobile towers to gain a height advantage over the city walls. But in spite of this, and the soldiers' long experience with siege warfare, progress was slow. Chary's squadron of triremes prevented the Macedonians from blockading the city's port. This meant that aid was never shut off. Persian satraps sent both supplies and mercenaries to assist the defenders, as did Byzantium and other allies. The defenders still used the old-fashioned catapults, which remained effective, and more artillery was brought into the city. Perinthus lay on a slope with tiers of tightly packed houses climbing upwards. When Philip's men breached the outer wall with battering rams, the defenders built another line just behind it, and the whole process had to begin again. Day after day, the Macedonians made attacks on different sectors of the defenses, trying to wear the defenders down as they had often done in the past. Artillery, no doubt backed by archers and slingers, shot down from the towers onto the walls, making it untenable for defenders, while the rams kept up their work. Repeated attacks using ladders forced the Perinthians to come out into the walls and repulse them as casualties mounted on both sides. The secondary wall was breached and then taken, only for the Macedonians to discover that the streets and alleys between the houses were solidly barricaded. Effectively, they were facing another new wall. This could only bring rams and other engines against it if they demolished any structures on the ground in front. When the Macedonians breached this line of defense, the Perinthians pulled back to their next tier of houses and yet another improvised line. As they drew back and upwards into the city, Philip's towers were negated, and the advantage of shooting or throwing missiles downward passed to the defenders. More than adequate supplies kept reaching the city, and the Perinthians remained confident. Philip gambled that in aiding Perinthians, thus stripped by the Byzantium of its best men, engines, and leaders. Dividing his army into two halves, he force-marched with one section of it in hope of taking the bigger city. Once there, he began another siege and discovered he was partially right, for the defense was less than energetic than normal. Early on, luck favored him when he discovered a vast convoy of grain ships had been gathered in the nearby Heraion on the Asiatic side of the Bosporus, waiting for an escort to take it to Athens. Chares was away for a conference with the Persians, so Philip, combining the small Macedonian fleet with soldiers ferried across to attack the port from the land, captured the entire convoy. Some 50 vessels were released, but he'd taken 180 Athenian vessels. Merchant vessels in this period tend to be relatively small, with trade relying on lots of smaller ships rather than some of the larger grain ships that later operated in the Roman Empire. The grain they carried fed his army, while the ships themselves were broken apart and any sizable timbers used as siege works. Yet Byzantium's fortifications were formidable, and once again, the Macedonians were incapable of cutting the city off from the sea. Reinforcements came from Rhodes, Kos, and Chios, swelling the numbers and raising the spirits of the defenders. A night attack during a torrential rain almost succeeded in achieving surprise until barking dogs woke up enough men to rush to the spot and repulse the Macedonians. This gamble had failed, as had the bigger one in splitting his forces, and eventually, Philip decided to call off both sieges. Athens smashed the stone inscribed with the treaty agreed to in 346 BCE. Opinion is divided over whether or not Philip had already effectively declared war, and if so, when this happened. Statements in a letter to the Athenians in 1341 might be taken as an ultimatum that would ultimately lead to war if Athens didn't make redress. Demosthenes had constantly assured his fellow citizens that war with Philip was inevitable. His words and actions, along with those of Hegesipp and others of like mind, had gone a long way to make that come true. By 340 BCE, Athens found some allies, unlike its earlier appeals, but they remained few. it was unclear whether others would join, and even less clear whether there was any real prospect of defeating Philip. Demosthenes' promises are now about to be put to the test. But I want to make one little comment here, because there is an incident that occurs in 340 BCE that's interesting. It should go right here. Although it was a minor affair compared to the operations on the Thracian coast, while Philip was gone, he appointed his 16-year-old son Alexander as regent, bringing an end to his years of formal study. Trouble broke out amongst the Medi, a group on the borders of Paeonia and Thrace, and the teenager gathered whatever forces he had under his command and marched against them. Plutarch provides a few details of the affair other than to say that he captured their main settlement, expelled the population, and refounded it. Copying his father, he settled a mixed population there and again, like his father, named it after himself, Alexandropolis. This was the first time the prince had gone to war, and we cannot say how serious the fighting was. There is no doubt it was yet another sign of his confidence. And his father was critical of him because if he was going to rename the city, it should have been named after him, not Alexander. And then made the joke, supposedly, that can't you at least wait until I die before you start naming cities? So a little interesting story here. So now we have gotten to the point where it appears that the main war is going to break out between Athens and Macedonia. Now the sources for this, The Politics by Aristotle, The Histories by Herodotus, Histories, 12 volumes, by Diodorus Siculus, Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, and The Lives by Plutarch, Philip and Alexander, Kings and Conquerors by Goldsworthy, History of Macedonia, Volume 1 and Volume 2 by Hammond, In the Shadow of Olympus, The Emergence of Macedonia by Borgia. So I hope you enjoyed that. And as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.